From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 28th day of August, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. You can find him online at globalcomresearch.com. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. And as we close out our time together, you'll either hear a snippet of our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon, or the whole of the program if you can stay with us all the way through the top of the hour. Otherwise, you can find it online now at willag.org in its entirety, and many of these radio stations will carry Commodity Week over the weekend. Stay with us right here on this radio station for more of the Closing Market Report in just a moment. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures finished the day mixed. The nearby September opinion 3/4 higher at 346. December 359 and a quarter, 3/4 higher. March down a quarter at 369 and a quarter. And May futures at 375 and 3/4 down a quarter. July corn a half lower at 379 and a half. Soybeans were higher at the end of the day. September up 13 and a quarter, $9.50 and a half the settlement price. November beans at 950 and a half, up 8 and a half. And January at 956 and a quarter, 8 and 3/4 higher. March futures 956 and a quarter, 8 and 3/4 higher as well. And July up 8 and 3/4 at $9.59 and 3/4. The bean oil futures up 8 cents in the lead September at 33.39. October there down 21 cents at 33.10. Bean meal futures October up 6.40 at $304.10. July soft red winter wheat for the day. A quarter of a cent lower at 5.61 and a quarter. The hard red down a half at 4.97 and a half. Live cattle futures in the nearby contract up 25 cents at 103.22 and a half. Feeders were down a buck 20 for the day, and lean hogs finished $2.07 lower. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlow at globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Great to be with you on another Friday, hot Friday out here in Atchison, Todd. Another 95 degree day. I think we're running 5 or 6 days in a row at this point. A lot of the river bottom ground is turning brown, and guys are talking a lot about losing bean yields right now.
And anybody moving in the field?
Not yet, no. I think you'll probably start to see quite a bit of silage chopped, probably way south of me, maybe another hour and a half, 2 hours, closer to Wichita, that area, because that last cattle on feed report really showed a lot of feeders coming off pasture and heading into the feedlots in a big, big way, and it's because of the drought. So something to keep in mind, that along with the idea that we're getting really close to planting that next winter wheat crop, and that could be an issue when it comes to how many acres we get in if we don't get some relief.
And I know that you from time to time go to Belleville, Illinois with me for the meetings that we host there, the Commodity Week panels with their marketing crew from the Farm Bureau, and those guys were moving this week. I think awful early, but it may have been pushed, I guess. I was thinking I saw that their basis on the river was something like 27 or 28 over for corn. So,
yeah, right. I had heard that from a client not far from Decatur, and the idea, I think, also is they want to pick up their test weight before they lose it.
Yeah. So, well, lots of things happening, including something I did not catch yesterday, but that you reminded me of as we were getting ready to do this conversation. The Fed has now changed the way it's, what, dealing with the potential for inflation in the future?
Yeah, I don't want to undersell this or oversell it. I want to try and play it right down the middle, because there's a lot of digging that has to be done, and the Fed is still commenting on it today as we go on the air. But the bottom line of what they did on Thursday afternoon was a policy shift that neither you nor I have seen in the last 25 or 30 years since we've been doing this job. And they are going to be now more tolerant of inflation, and they're going to build a framework in that mindset, in that vein. And they are sounding as though, and I'm starting to read many of their reports right now, that sounds as though they are willing to sacrifice price stability, low prices, in other words, because that has cost low and middle income jobs. And how much they're willing to do it is not known yet. But I can tell you that we saw the dollar index hit a two-year low against the Japanese yen, the copper hit a two-year high, and the Chinese currency hitting close to its 2020 high from late January. I think, Todd, what this says to me is that the Federal Reserve maybe is starting to understand that they have really stoked the stock market through deflation at the expense of commodities and manufacturing. And so this could be a generational shift in monetary policy. So this is a really big deal. It's hard to integrate into marketing plans, but it really needs to be thought about.
You mean through all the money that's been printed in the last year?
That's exactly right. How do you get out of debt? And, you know, the old-fashioned way in the economics books that I read when I was in college was you inflate your way out of debt. You essentially make the back end pay for the front end by letting inflation erode your debt if you're a government. Otherwise, you default. And I wonder if that's not part of the mechanism that they're thinking about. I think the bottom line, though, is they realize that low and middle income jobs have come at a big cost. And yes, we're buying cheaper goods than we were 25, 30 years ago, but we're not making any more money either.
Hard to forecast, but would it mean an inflationary spin in the commodity market so prices could go higher because of it? And I don't know when or how, but is that what the implication might be?
Yes, I think that's right, because a couple of the Fed governors have already talked. Kaplan's talked, and he said on Bloomberg that he was willing to go up to 2.25% instead of 2%. Another Harker came in and said on CNBC that creeping up to 2.5% is not a problem, or that's how I read what his comments were and what he said. But the mindset would be asset diversification along the lines of what you and I've talked about in terms of investors moving their portfolios around. I think within probably the next month, we will have a very well established mindset in the markets as to whether that happens or not, because at the price level that we're at in the ag commodities as opposed to the equities markets, it sure looks like one's way overvalued and one's way undervalued, especially with this new news and this potential new policy shift.
What do you make of the rally in the soybean market, and what should producers should do about it, if anything?
You know, I know weather was a major factor in the middle of the week when the hurricane hit, and it didn't look like much help was going to come at all between now and the weekend, and essentially between now and the next crop conditions report Monday. The way I saw this week was crop conditions kicked us off. Shorts had to cover, mainly funds, because they realized the drought monitor was more accurate than the crop conditions. They've been playing it the exact opposite. Midweek came the hurricane. And then late in the week, we saw, and this is probably the most important feature to how high beans could actually go, other than, you know, obviously weather, but the Brazilians came in and said, we are not going to charge any import tariff at all on corn and beans and maybe barley and maybe wheat. That suggests that they have indeed oversold their bushels, and we have seen the Brazilian pork price at Paranagua jump to about $415 a ton, whereas we are at the Gulf around $370 a ton. So the disparity of $15 a ton several weeks ago between the two prices is essentially doubled at this stage. So the higher the Brazilian price goes, the higher our price could go with it, because we are probably going to start shipping beans and corn into Brazil at this point. So this is another key dynamic that we really have to put in the forefront of our marketing plan.
And anybody else on the world market who needs beans probably will need to turn to the United States, including China. They can't wait for the new crop to come on in January at some point.
That's exactly right. You have that issue with the Chinese and the United States still going after one another in a trade mindset, but that's off the table. That was another thing that happened this week, but I'm not throwing it completely off the table between now and the November election. One thing to your point, very importantly, is that when I did my weekly meeting with my South American colleague in Brazil, he reminded me that there were a lot of issues with some vegetable oil supplies around the world right now. And when I think about that, and I think about the ultimate demand for meal because of the poultry and pork rebuilding that we're looking at in many major producing countries, the product markets look very supportive right now to the soybeans.
Hey, thanks so much. I do appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo at globalcomresearch.com. That's com with two M's, globalcomresearch.com. On this Friday, let's check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hey, good afternoon to you, Eric. Thanks for being with us. Can you recap That storm Laura, it turned really fierce and big, and then it sputtered out pretty quickly too.
Yeah, so you know, Laura rapidly intensified in the Gulf of Mexico, and then on Wednesday came on shore here and went right through Louisiana-Texas border. And along the way, we actually measured 150 mile an hour wind gusts. We had a report out at Lake Charles, which is in southern Louisiana, where the radar there was actually just completely destroyed, ripped off its pedestal. And the last observation we got from the Lake Charles weather station was 138 mile an hour gusts. So this was a pretty nasty one. But thankfully, as most hurricanes do, as soon as they get on land, they begin to dissipate. So it becomes an inland flooding problem at that point. And this particular system dropped a lot of rain right through the part of Louisiana and into Arkansas. And it's now making the turn today on Friday, heading over to parts of the Mid-South, heading over into then cutting through like southern Illinois a little bit, very southern tip of southern Illinois, after going through Missouri and then getting into Tennessee, Kentucky, where it's going to put down quite a bit of rainfall. So this is what we're going to be dealing with now for the foreseeable future, right? The peak of the hurricane season is September the 10th. So we're not even there yet. We still have the whole second half of the season to go. And just to put a little bug in your ear, you know, we only have a name list for hurricanes that's 21 names long. We don't use the letters Q, U, X, Y, and Z. And right now, the potential for us to have a season that exhausts all of our names is there. And, you know, we have a contingency plan. We'll actually go into the Greek alphabet. And the last time we did that was 2005. So just something to think about.
Oh, interesting. Hey, one other thing. Why is it, do we know that the surge wasn't as large as projected?
Well, I'm not so sure just yet that it was. So we got to think about what that part of the coastline looks like, right? So if there's a lot of marshland down there. There is a lot of, in other words, it's not as developed and as engineered as other parts of the coast is. So a couple of things happened. The timing was important with respect to the tide. The trajectory at which the hurricane came in was important, but still, I'll be honest with you, any storm surge at all is bad. And we're going to be getting further reports in on how high the storm surge was. But think about this too. When it came through, it was in the very middle of the night. So the storm surge peaks right there, and then the water will wash back out very quickly. We may not have actually gotten a good measurement on how high it actually was. So it's going to be a tricky one to diagnose as we go back and do a quick recap of that storm at some point.
In our part of the world today, can we expect rainfall?
Yeah, well, we were watching yesterday a lot of severe weather that came out of the Dakotas. In fact, there were over 400 reports of severe weather yesterday. Part of it was in South Dakota. The other part was over in Pennsylvania, New York. Well, the same boundary is now lingering a bit farther to the south. And as you can tell today on Friday, we're still on the southern side of that boundary, which is why the air is still a bit juicy and disgusting, right? But that's the fuel for storms. And so we're going to be watching this area between Iowa, southern Wisconsin, and northern Illinois, possibly getting into central Illinois, maybe later today, could be on the lookout for some strong to severe storms. So yeah, we got the potential here, but it'll get cleared out after that, and that'll be nice.
Anything of note after the storm system moves through?
Yeah, so we're going to settle into a pattern here to begin the month of September that is actually going to be relatively cool compared to normal. Now, to be a few degrees cooler than average at the beginning of September is going to feel fantastic, but we may carry that pretty far into the month of September. Some of the longer range models aren't suggesting that we're going to be getting with sustained above average temperatures until maybe the second half of the month. And at that point, you know, we're looking here, we're knocking on the door of October. I can't believe how fast this growing season's going. So yeah, this changeover over the last 6 days where we've been so hot, get ready for some cooler weather coming in. Right now, no hint of frost, not even in the Canadian prairies. No hint of frost early, which is a good thing to think about.
How about the end of the month?
Well, you remember, as we step into the end of the month, forecasting precipitation is going to be a challenge. As we start to think about harvest this far out, exactly knowing what the precipitation patterns are going to do will be hard to do. But the good news is I don't see the same weather patterns evolving this year that we had last year or in 2018, which means those two, remember, were extremely wet harvests. At this particular point, not seeing those particular features evolve.
Anything else maybe on, for instance, the La Nina?
Yeah, so the La Nina has actually gotten a little bit of life lately. It's still just barely passing the threshold of becoming a La Nina. But what I think we have to understand is with that development, while it may not have a strong control on U.S. weather, what it is doing is it's helping to keep the start of the South American monsoon a bit delayed. And overall, that means that the drier conditions that are in central Brazil, well, that could possibly push back planting. Now, what it means really is they're not going to be aggressively planting early. It may push them to right on time planting or planting a little bit late. So we got something to watch there in South America already.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Well, yesterday afternoon, we recorded our Commodity Week program. You can hear the whole of the program online right now at willag.org, willag.org, or if you are able to stick with us on our home station all the way through the end of the hour. Otherwise, you can hear it on many of these stations over the weekend as well. Commodity Week is our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agricultural markets. Our panelists this week include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing, Philip Shaw from Grain Farmers of Ontario, and Garrett Toy of First Choice Commodities. I started, of course, by asking each of them for a short list of discussion points for the program. Here's Matt Bennett's answer.
I think it'd be interesting to see how everyone thinks yield expectations have been adjusted in the month of August due to the rainfall totals we've seen. And then, you know, maybe also a little bit of a discussion on how much more Chinese business we can all expect moving forward, because obviously some of these sales like this morning on corn were certainly something that we all wanted to see.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef AgriMarketing.
Yeah, I'd say as a corollary to that, what's going to drive this is the fund position. They're getting pretty lofty levels in the beans. They've added a lot of that on this week. How much more are they going to come to the table? And are they going to get long in corn? They've come out of a lot of their short position. Are they going to get long now? I think that is going to be a key to our markets the next 60 or 90 days as well.
Philip Shaw in Dresden, Ontario. Anything from your list?
Yeah, I would like the guys to discuss the value of the U.S. dollar and how it's affecting some of our futures prices for grain. It's, you know, the Canadian dollar acts in an inverse direction to the U.S. dollar. So up here, I talk about the Canadian dollar all the time, but it's highly dependent on the U.S. dollar. And I know the U.S. dollar has been going down lately, and I'd like the guys to discuss that. Also, too, there seems to be something amiss in China, you know, with regard to all the demand we're getting for American soybeans, as well as American agricultural commodities, whether it's corn or some of the meats as well. And I just can't quite figure it out, and I'd sure like the guys to discuss what might be going on there. And, you know, the possibility that maybe we didn't plant enough soybeans this year. So that's just a few things.
And Garrett Toy from First Choice Commodities.
Yeah, I think the focus, you know, Matt kind of hit on the on supply question. I mean, obviously, I think it's on the demand question, especially at where we're at on potential further shutdowns or returns to gasoline demand, you know, and its impacts on ethanol. In the corn S&Ds. And I also, I think it'd be interesting to find out everyone's kind of ideas as far as, you know, there's been a lot of inflationary talk and whether that has been an influence to the commodity markets or to the ags. Are we finally starting to see some of this inflationary buying in the ags starting to show up as an underlying feature as well?
I'd like to come back to Philip Shaw's question here. Is there something amiss in China? And what might it be? I know that the floods have been really heavy. That would be in some of the soybean growing areas, but generally from central to southern areas. And, of course, corn and soybeans grown in the northeastern part of China. Matt, what do we know about production this year in China and stocks that they have on hand?
Well, if, stocks on hand, good luck there, first of all. But as far as, you know, there's definitely been production lost. I mean, there's no question. Obviously, they've had flooding in places. Heck, they've had dry weather in places. So they've had a mixed bag of weather calamities this year. But, you know, the interesting thing leading up to this is that the Chinese had been using more corn and beans, you know, pretty much every year here for the last several years in a row. And it's finally kind of caught up. I mean, you look at these auctions, government auctions, they can send it. Continue to offer up 4 million metric tons of corn every single time every single bushel gets sold. And so, you know, dating back to the month of May, I mean, they've sold well in excess of 40 million metric ton of corn. So, you know, as far as their stocks though go, I've said all along, you just cannot figure it out. It's really hard to know. If they give you information, you don't know if it's reliable. I do feel like they know that there's a lot of power in their information, and they certainly use it to their benefit. But if the market's telling me anything on interior corn prices for China, I mean, they're sky high. They can buy U.S. corn take it over there and sell it and make money. So I kind of expect them to do that here moving forward.
So I want to relate that, Karatoy, to the other question that Philip asked, which was about the U.S. dollar and the cost of commodities from the United States on the world marketplace. Is it just that China sees commodities from the United States as a good buy in comparison to what they might be able to pick up from South America at this point?
If there is indeed an issue within Chinese SMBs domestically, higher commodity prices domestically, the value of the dollar, I don't believe, really has much impact in it. They're going to buy what they want to buy, when they're going to buy. The dollar weakness is more going to be impacted by Japan or the European Union, our traditional buyers that are more price elastic or demand elastic as far as where the origins are. But there is something amiss. I mean, 2 weeks ago, Chinese President Xi Jinping, they have a new mantra about reducing food waste. It goes right down the food chain from corn and soybeans to pork to everything. But they're even discussing potentially weighing customers at a restaurant table to determine how many plates of food they can buy. So something is definitely going on there. And I think that there's a concern about whether it's cheap commodities and they're trying to control their own food inflation, which may be a domino effect of the ASF issues from 18 to 24 months ago that they're trying to keep in check.
Anything to add to this argument, Chip Nallinger?
Yeah, I mean, I think the dollar, I just say two things. I try to keep it simple. And they said here recently, I think it was even earlier this week, that their corn crop and their grain crops are excellent. So that probably tells you all you need to know that they do have a crop problem. I think it comes back to they don't have a bumper crop and they need the bushels. And I think they also telegraph pretty nicely right now. We're the only game in town. There's not a lot of supply of beans left in Brazil. And normally we'd be picking up that business now anyway. But I'm really fearful, number one, once the elections pass, and number two, once we get into winter and new crop supplies in South America, they're going to go back down there, if it works for their balance sheet and it pencils in better than us. So it's nice to see the business now. I don't get too caught up in the dollar because some of our other competitors, Russia and Brazil, especially Brazil, their currency is still very, very weak. So, once they have new crop supplies, they're in a lot more competitive situation than we are. And even if China business continues, we're going to lose some of our other business potentially to South America once they have new crop supplies available. And that's a ways down the road. So we've got some clear sailing for a little while here.
That's Chip Nallinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing. He and Matt Bennett, Philip Shaw, and Garrett Toy all joined us for our Commodity Week discussion recorded yesterday afternoon. Stay with us here on Illinois Public Media. We'll have more from Commodity Week in just a moment.